TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Israel's bombing off Gaza, May 2021. Rashida Tlaib and Sami Alarian. Thanks to Amy Goodman and Chris Hedges for the moving presentations on the status of Palestinians. Democracy Now! Rebroadcast Rashida Tlaib's courageous speech of May 13. Here's Amy Goodman.
We begin with the words of Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib of Michigan. She became the first Palestinian-American woman to be elected to Congress in 2018. She spoke Thursday on the floor of the House.
I am the only Palestinian-American member of Congress now, and my mere existence has disrupted the status quo. I am a reminder to colleagues that Palestinians do indeed exist, that we are human, that we are allowed to dream. We are mothers, daughters, granddaughters. We are justice seekers and are unapologetically about our fight against oppressions of all forms. And colleagues, Palestinians aren't going anywhere, no matter how much money you send to Israel's apartheid government. If we are to make good on our promises to support equal human rights for all, it is our duty to end the apartheid system that for decades has subjected Palestinians to inhumane treatment and racism. Reducing Palestinians to live in utter fear and terror of losing a child, being indefinitely detained or killed because of who they are, and the unequal rights and protections they have under Israeli law. It must end. One of Israel's most prominent human rights organizations, B'Tselem, has declared Israel an apartheid state. Human Rights Watch recently recognized it, too. This is what Palestinians living under Israel's oppression have been telling us for decades. I have been told by some of my colleagues who dispute the truth about segregation, racism, and violence in Israel towards Palestinians that I need to know the history. What they mean, unintentionally or not, is that Palestinians do not have the right to tell the truth about what happened to them during the founding of Israel. They are, in effect, they erase the truth about ethnic cleansing of Palestinians in Israel that some refer to as the Nakba, our catastrophe. As Palestinians talk about our history, know that many of my Black neighbors, indigenous communities, may not know what we mean by Nakba. But they do understand what it means to be killed, expelled from your home, land, made homeless, and stripped of your human rights. My ancestors and current family in Palestine deserve the world to hear their history without obstruction. They have a right to be able to explain to the world that they are still suffering, still being dispossessed, still being killed as the world watches and does nothing. As Peter Beinart, an American of Jewish faith, writes, quote, "When you tell a people to forget its past, you are not proposing peace. You are proposing extinction." The Palestinian story is that of being made a refugee on the lands you called home. We cannot have an honest conversation about U.S. military support for the Israeli government today without acknowledging that for Palestinians, the catastrophe of displacement and dehumanization in their homeland has been ongoing since 1948. To read the statements from President Biden, Secretary Blinken, General Austin, and leaders of both parties, you'd hardly know Palestinians existed at all. There has been no recognition of the attack on Palestinian families being ripped from their homes in East Jerusalem right now, or home demolitions. No mention of children being detained or murdered. No recognition of a sustained campaign of harassment and terror by Israeli police against worshipers kneeling down and praying and celebrating their holiest days in one of their holiest places. No mention of Al-Aqsa being surrounded by violence, tear gas, smoke, while people pray. Can my colleagues imagine if it was their place of worship filled with tear gas? Could you pray as stun grenades were tossed into your holiest place? Above all, there has been absolutely no recognition of Palestinian humanity. If our own State Department can't even bring itself to acknowledge the killing of Palestinian children is wrong, well, I will say it for the millions of Americans who stand with me against the killing of innocent children, no matter their ethnicity or faith. I weep for all the lives lost under the unbearable status quo, every single one, no matter their faith, their background. We all deserve freedom, liberty, peace, and justice, and it should never be denied because of our faith or ethnic background. No child, Palestinian or Israeli, whoever they are, should ever have to worry that death will rain from the sky. How many of my colleagues are willing to say the same, to stand for Palestinian human rights as they do for Israelis? There is a crushing dehumanization to how we talk about this terrible violence. The New York Post reported that the Palestinian death toll as Israeli casualties. ABC says that Israelis are, quote, killed, while Palestinians simply, quote, die, as if by magic, as if they were never human to begin with. Help me understand the math. How many Palestinians have to die for their lives to matter? Life under apartheid strips Palestinians of their human dignity. How would you feel if you had to go through dehumanizing checkpoints, 2 blocks from your own home to go to the doctor or travel across your own land? How would you feel if you had to do it while pregnant in the scorching heat as soldiers with guns controlled your freedom? How would you feel it if you lived in Gaza, where your power and water might be out for days or weeks at a time, where you were cut off from the outside world by inhumane military blockade? Meanwhile, Palestinians' rights to nonviolent resistance have been curtailed and even criminalized. Our party leaders have spoken forcefully against BDS, calling its proponents anti-Semitic, despite the same tactics being critical to ending the South African apartheid mere decades ago. What we are telling Palestinians fighting apartheid is the same thing being told to my Black neighbors and Americans throughout that are fighting against police brutality here. There is no form of acceptable resistance to state violence. As long as the message from Washington is that our military support for Israel is unconditional, Netanyahu's extremism, right-wing government will continue to expand settlements, continue to demolish homes, and continue to make the prospects for peace impossible. 330 of my own colleagues, and Democrats and Republicans here, 75% of the body here, signed a letter pledging that Israel shall never be made to comply with basic human rights laws that other countries that receive our military aid must observe. You know, when I see the images and videos of destruction and death in Palestine, all I hear are the children screaming from pure fear and terror. I want to read something a mother named Iman in Gaza wrote 2 days ago. She said, quote, "Tonight I put the kids to sleep in our bedroom so that when we die together." And no one would live to mourn the loss of another one. The statement broke me a little more because of my country's policies and funding will deny this mother's right to see children live, her own children live without fear and to grow old without painful trauma and violence. We must condition aid to Israel on compliance with international human rights and end the apartheid. We must, with no hesitation, demand that our country recognize the unconditional support of Israel has enabled the erasure of Palestinian life and the denial of the rights of millions of refugees, and emboldens the apartheid policies that Human Rights Watch has detailed thoroughly in their recent report. I stand before you not only as a congresswoman for the beautiful 13 District Strong, but also as a proud daughter of Palestinian immigrants and the granddaughter of a loving Palestinian grandmother living in the occupied Palestine. You take that and you combine it with the fact that I was raised in one of the most beautiful, blackest cities in America, a city where movements for civil rights and social justice are birthed, the city of Detroit. So I can't stand here. I can't stand silent when injustice exists, where the truth is obscured. If there's one thing Detroit instilled in this Palestinian girl from Southwest, it's you always speak truth to power, even if your voice shakes. The freedom of Palestinians is connected to the fight against oppression all over the world. Lastly, to my city in Palestine, Ashanik, and the work of Hannah, I stand here because of you. Thank you.
Democratic Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib of Michigan speaking on the House floor Thursday. She's the first Palestinian-American woman elected to Congress.
Thanks to Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! For rebroadcasting Rashida Tlaib's speech that she gave on May 13, 2021. Next up is Chris Hedges, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, Presbyterian minister, author, and television host of On Contact. Hedges was a foreign correspondent and bureau chief in the Middle East and the Balkans for 15 years. Here are excerpts of his 27-minute interview with Dr. Sami Alarian, director of the Center for Islamic and Global Affairs in Istanbul, posted online on May 17, 2021.
Welcome to On Contact. Today we will discuss the clashes between the Israelis and Palestinians with the Palestinian activist Dr. Sami Alarian.
We weep for every child when they die and for every man and woman when they are injured and when they are being targeted, but there is no other recourse. I mean, the world has failed us, has betrayed the Palestinians for 28 years. They told the Palestinians, come, recognize Israel, and within 5 years, you're going to have your rights in the West Bank and Gaza. 28 years later, and it's even worse than it's ever been. So I think the Palestinians no longer believe in such flawed processes. The United States has to step up to the plate. It's as much responsible to the suffering of the Palestinians as Israelis are, because they are enabling them to do what they want. They are financing them. They are giving them all the ammunitions. Every bullet that Palestinians was shot off was made in the United States. Every plane was made in the United States. Every bomb was financed and imported and paid for and delivered to Israel by the United States. And the United States, it has to come to realize that it is part of the problem, and unless they do major correction, it's going to continue to suffer in this part of the world. People do not hate America because of their democracy or because of their freedom. People abhor the policies of the United States because it is not just. They try to punish the Palestinians so that they can please the Israelis.
Nearly all the words and phrases used by the Democrats, Republicans, and the talking heads on the media to describe the unrest inside Israel and the heaviest Israeli assault against the Palestinians since the 2014 attacks on Gaza, which lasted 51 days and killed more than 2,200 Palestinians, including 551 children, are a lie. Israel, by employing its military machine against an occupied population that does not have mechanized units, an air force, navy, missiles, heavy artillery and command and control, not to mention a U.S. commitment to provide $38 billion in defense aid to Israel over the next decade, is not exercising the right to defend itself. It is carrying out mass murder. It is a war crime. Israel has made it clear. It is ready to destroy and kill as wantonly now as it was in 2014. Israel's defense minister, Benny Gantz, who was the chief of staff during the murderous assault on Gaza in 2014, has vowed that if Hamas, in his words, does not stop the violence, the strike of 2021 will be harder and more painful than that of 2014. These current attacks have already targeted residential high-rises, including the obliteration of a dozen international and local news agencies, government buildings, roads, public facilities, agricultural lands, two schools, and a mosque. Joining me to discuss the conflict is the Palestinian political activist Dr. Sami Alarian, director of the Center for Islamic and Global Affairs in Istanbul. Sami, let's talk about what's happening There is a kind of pattern where the Israelis will call it mowing the lawn, where the Palestinians erupt. Israel uses draconian, overwhelming force to inflict heavy civilian casualties, and we should add destroy infrastructure, which is then not repaired, making life even more difficult, especially in places in Gaza. Is this a repetition of that pattern?
First, it's great to be with you, Chris. Well, we have to put what's happening today in the occupied territories, particularly in Gaza and Jerusalem, in the context. This thing didn't happen in vacuum. Didn't happen just overnight. For several weeks, the Israelis have been trying to evict Palestinians from their homes that they lived for over 50 years in the suburb in Jerusalem, across very close to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And then, in addition, in the holiest month of the year for Muslims in Jerusalem, where thousands, tens of thousands go and pray at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, one of the holiest shrines in Islam, in the history of the Islamic world. And they try to impose new restrictions on people going into Al-Aqsa Mosque and praying. And then they were trying to impose a demonstration on what they call Jerusalem Day by bringing thousands of settlers inside Al-Haram, inside the holiest shrine, while people are praying. And when people resisted that and they refused and rejected these assaults, then they came in force, fully equipped, in military-style invasions, and they bombed using tear gas and using clubs and using rubber bullets, hundreds of Palestinians, in a way to intimidate them, and in the words of the police chief, in order to ascertain who is dominant, who is in charge here. So it was all intimidations. And with the attempt to Jewidize Jerusalem in the occupied territories in Jerusalem and try to evict Palestinians, there was, of course, an outrage and a response. And that response escalated to what we are seeing today in Gaza, including, obviously, the bombing of major areas or residential in Gaza, and the response by the resistance groups by sending rockets across the Palestinian areas that were occupied in 48.
But how is this different from 2014, if it is? Because there is this belief within the Israeli military that you pound the Palestinians, especially in Gaza, into submission. They're quiet for a while. They rise up. You pound them again. The wholesale violence is quite massive. On the day that the Trump administration moved the embassy from Tel Aviv, the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, again, a violation of international law, I think there were 60 Palestinians shot dead in protest on that very day, not a word from the administration. Are we just seeing the pattern, or is this new?
No, it's a pattern, certainly. It happened in 2008, 2009, 2012, 2014, and now we're seeing it today as well. And of course, this theory of mowing the lawn or getting a haircut has been popularized by this famous saying of the Israeli general, in which they think that whenever the resistance movements get strength in terms of their ability to strike at Israel, they have to come and pound them and to teach them a lesson. But I think this time around, there was also massive response from the other side. Hundreds of rockets rained on Israeli cities as far as Tel Aviv and Jerusalem and all areas in between, Ashdod, Ashkelon, and the many settlements around Gaza. So it's not free ride as it used to be. I mean, you remember, you covered the 1982 Lebanon invasion of Israel and how the Lebanese weren't able to deter Israel. Today, Israel doesn't dare to strike at Lebanon because of the resistance in South Lebanon and now the strength of Hezbollah. And I think what's happening is similar, obviously with a vast difference that Gaza is much closer and much weaker. As long as occupation continues, these kind of clashes are inevitable. I think the Palestinians have taught the Israelis the lesson that regardless of the pounding, regardless of the suffering, they insist on resisting and restoring their rights. And I don't think they're going to succeed. In fact, today you can see with this massive militarized state, where they, I mean, you enumerated the power they have, the military they've got, the assistance they have, the diplomatic cover they got from the United States, yet they are today still suffering. I mean, this massive balance of power difference between the Palestinians and Israel, and yet they're still head-to-head fighting. The Palestinians have most of the suffering for sure, but I think they are also teaching the Israelis a lesson that when people are determined to resist and determined to get back their rights, they don't give up, and eventually they will get them back.
There are two things that struck me as different from 2014. I'd like you to speak about that unrest inside the borders of Israel proper.
I think that's a major development in the conflict. What Israel wanted to do for a long time, and they were successful in some of these times, is to divide the Palestinians into those who were occupied in 1948, what is called behind the green line, and the Palestinians in the West Bank, in Jerusalem, in Gaza, and of course in the diaspora. And so you have five different communities, and they're not united, and they're not able to resist, and then they can deal with each faction, with each community separately. What we see today is a major shift in that policy, that the Palestinians inside the green line in the 1948 areas have erupted and have become part of resisting that colonial settler project called Israel today. And what we see today, I think, have shaken the Israeli political establishment, and I believe that there will be consequences for this. Palestinians now see themselves as one people resisting this project that is trying to depopulate them, expel them from their lands, take their lands away, steal it, basically, like what's happening in Sheikh Jarrah, stealing their property and their possession. And I think that is going to have major consequences. And I think it puts the international community in notice, particularly people in the United States. I think people have seen now all the rules, all the different narratives that they use against the Palestinians have now been exposed and uncovered, and people see Israel for what it is. It's a settler colonialist project in the heart of the Arab world, in Palestine, where they were trying to expel the Palestinians, replace people, and put someone else in their place. And that hasn't succeeded because simply the Jews of the world today, the overwhelming majority, have not adhered to this call of Zionists. So they stopped at 6 million, while the Jews probably about 16 million around the world. And Palestinians refused to leave, even though 700,000 of them were kicked out in 1948. Their descendants today number about 7 million. Yet you also have the people, the Palestinian people inside Palestine proper, inside all of historic Palestine, are more today than the Jews themselves. That's a major problem for Israel. What are you going to do with these people? I mean, either they will have to incorporate them, in which the nature of the Zionist project will dissolve, or they will have to impose an apartheid type regime, not only on Palestinians under occupation, but also throughout, because laws that are passed in the Knesset, which is the Israeli parliament, are designed to give advantage, privileges, to Jews rather than Arabs. So even if you're a citizen of the country, you're not treated the same. And this kind of a system is a bygone era. This is what we used to fight back, you know, in the last century, particularly in the 80s, against apartheid South Africa. And that's what's being what's happening today in Israel. They try to cover it, and they try to make it sound that this is the only democracy in the Middle East. But I think people know better now, particularly the youth. We see that this is a total rejection of this state today across the globe. The only holding country right now probably would be the United States, and not even the whole United States, just these political elites that are trying to argue what Israel has been arguing since its foundation, that it's a democracy. But that's a mockery of what's actually happening on the ground.
We continue our conversation about the disputes between the Palestinians and the Israelis with a Palestinian activist, Dr. Sami Al-Aryan.
What you see today is a manifestation, obviously, of 12 years of an attempt to impose Israeli will on Palestinians and work towards greater Israel by bringing through a flawed process called Oslo settlements throughout the years. When Oslo was signed back in 1993-94, there were hardly 150,000 settlers inside the occupied territories, particularly the West Bank and Jerusalem. Today, they number over 800,000, including East Jerusalem, which makes any kind of political settlement impossible. Now, keep in mind that much of these settler movements have been financed directly by U.S. extremists, Jewish extremists. Particularly, you know, Sheldon Adelson, who died a few months ago, who was actually the chief financier of these settlements around Jerusalem. Today, the problem in Sheikh Jarrah, which is a district in Jerusalem, the claim that these buildings belong to a settler movement, these movements are being financed by extreme movements within the United States, in the United States, under, you know, and getting even tax-free status. So the U.S. has been part and parcel of this problem. The extremist right has been part at the center of this, and also the extremists in the United States, you know, those who actually finance both the lobbying in the U.S. as well as the settlement movement in Palestine, Israel. Now, in terms of Israeli policies, that they are singing the same tune of Netanyahu and his right-wing groups. Netanyahu has been in power now for 12 years, and he's quoted in 2001, right before he became a prime minister, is that his main task is going to be to delay, derail, and make sure that peace process does never succeed. He will make damn sure that there will be no settlement and that Israel will retain the properties in the West Bank, in Jerusalem, and throughout. And now the fruition of this, if you want to see the blueprint of how Netanyahu thinks, all what you have to do is go and read the so-called deal of the century, steal of the century, I call it, in which, you know, they were trying to impose their will on the Palestinians by creating pockets of cantons, in the language of South African apartheid, for Palestinians, with tunnels and bridges and undergrounds in which Israel will have sovereignty throughout the Palestinian territories, which is basically the total domination of one group over the other, the classical definition of what colonialist settler project is. That's what they are offering, and the Palestinians refuse and resist. And when the United States stops funding these attempts to impose a racial hierarchy in terms of Jewish supremacy, the way white supremacists are trying to impose their will in the United States over other races like Blacks and Latinos and others, this is what we are confronted with. This is what the struggle is all about. I can't imagine that when people in the United States get all the facts that they will side with Jewish supremacists or Zionists or Israelis who are trying to impose their will and take all the land from the river to the sea. I think the end result is going to be the dismantlement of such system, that the ending of racial hierarchy, the ending of a settler colonialist project, and if Israel loses the support of the United States, that will be the end of a project called apartheid Israel. We're going to have a new phase, a new era, in which you could actually finally find peace in the Middle East, because then Israel can no longer, Israel that we know today as an aggressive apartheid racist settler colonial state will no longer be the case. And I think that's when you actually could see a major difference. But that's a big if, because it needs a lot of struggle, not only against that system in Palestine, but also within the United States. And that puts a lot of focus on the movements now coming in the U.S. to ask for equality and to ask for the end of the support of America to Israel, whether it's through BDS or other means. But the goal is clear, and the goal is to end apartheid in Palestine, Israel, and to also to call for the full restoration of Palestinian rights after so much suffering.
Great, thank you. That was Palestinian political activist Dr. Sami Alarian.
And that was Chris Hedges, journalist, Presbyterian minister, author, and television host of On Contact. Sami Alarian is director of the Center for Islamic and Global Affairs in Istanbul. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.